This edition of The Stack was first broadcast on the 11th of October 2014 on Monocle 24.
Air France to Philadelphia, Alitalia to Athens, BA to Bermuda, or Delta to Detroit. A quick perusal of the shopping pages or a much-needed cultural fix to help you through to the arrivals lounge. Vapid journalism full of hot air or inspiring writing blazing a trail with airline allure. An in-depth in-flight special this week on The Stack. We take to the skies and look at the onboard in-cabin offering when it comes to print. Once the proud publication for any self-respecting flag carrier, the in-flight magazine was the visual and editorial expression of a golden age of air travel. But what can travellers expect to find inside that familiar netted seat pocket now? We'll take stock of the mile-high magazine sector with an industry expert.
Essentially, what they need to do is better create connections between airline brands and their customers. They need to celebrate that relationship between an airline brand and a customer.
Plus, we'll be getting the view from the creatives at Monocle's sister agency here at Midori House on this 111th episode of The Stack, Monocle 24's dedicated print industry review and analysis programme. Hello and welcome to The Stack on Monocle 24 with me, Tom Edwards, taking charge here in the cockpit of Studio One as your regular Stack host, Tyler Brulé, finds himself, ironically, experiencing some rather inconvenient air transport delays somewhere on the coast of Canada. Tyler may well be in need of some pretty good in-flight reading material right about now. But without further ado, then, let's settle into our seats, recline, fully use all of that legroom we've got, but keep our shoes and socks firmly on as we take a trip through the world of airline publishing. To guide us through some of these titles, we welcome Wing Creative's creative director, Maurice Fraser, together with Adam Thompson, the agency's senior strategist. Adam, Maurice, hello to you both. Welcome back to The Stack. I think it's back on both of you, on both counts.
First time.
Oh, is it really? Oh, this is exciting.
Debut.
We're taking to the skies on a debut occasion. Let's just start off by looking at this sort of the industry-wide picture. Maurice, coming to you first of all, is there a sort of a received wisdom, do you think, about how best to make a really good in-flight magazine, or is it still a bit of a, are we still sort of on the learning curve almost?
We're probably at a time when, of course, the in-flight entertainment is really being analysed. It means that these in-flight magazines have to work much harder than they've had to do in the past. And it's something I think when we've been looking at this fantastic array of publishing that we have in front of us now, which is, you know, vast and wide, but it feels like a sort of a slightly old part of the publishing industry. It kind of needs to change. And I think, you know, there are some of these airlines that seem to be doing things a little bit more uniquely and pushing the medium.
Adam, it's interesting what Maurice says there about the sheer array. I was just remarking before we began that this is probably the most actual amount of magazines we've ever had assembled on our Stack table ever. We'll talk a little bit about some of your sort of favourites, I guess, in a minute. But looking at the array we have before us, there is that same range, I guess, in quality as well, from magazines that do a job really, really well and some that maybe have to pull their socks up a bit.
Absolutely. We've got everything from magazines printed on really questionable stock with highly dodgy editorial ideas through to, I think, a selection which have really kind of pushed things forward in terms of airline publishing. And so it's great to see such an array, as you say, but at the same time, you do look at some of them and think they just feel very tired. And 10 years ago, people didn't have their iPads and iPhones and so forth. And now I think they really have to do a lot more to stand out.
Well, let's maybe start with a couple that maybe lighten the way a little bit, Maurice. Maybe start with a couple that you think are doing a good job and that, you know, are showing the way forwards. What are some of your picks, I guess, from this vast array that we have in front of us?
Of course, we've got our own sort of experience of working with in-flight magazines, and it's always nice to see a very good piece of print and good piece of design, which also, you know, is something that is pushing the boundaries of the format itself, but also just sort of a pleasure to sort of flick through and read. And this Wailing, we were trying quite to pronounce it, but just seeing this, like, it's really great to see a piece of design. Really, it's, you know, we have a dual language design, which of course a lot of the in-flight magazines need to do, and it seems to handle it really in a really sort of effortless way. very confident sort of openers, great sort of original photography, interesting commissions on illustration. For example, I think when we get to the back of this Ling magazine, I think it's even the maps for the Barcelona destination, you know, once you get to the airport, it's a really interesting, you know, and nice, playful graphic. It's not just the standard one that they've been given from the airport. They've made an effort to make it their own and to really sort of guide the reader when they arrive at the destination. Really interesting snapshots on each of the cities, the destinations that they're flying to. Not too much, just sort of gentle hints of places to go to and interesting features. There's some really nice map work in there as well, which is neglected in a lot of the magazines as well.
It's interesting. I mean, it's maybe an in-flight magazine that doesn't kind of look like a traditional in-flight magazine. You mentioned the work, obviously, that Wink does. Is that one of the kind of challenges that often crops up? It's like, you know, how do we set this apart? We don't want it to look like an in-flight magazine. We want it to look like a magazine. Do you think that there's some clients maybe even who are still a bit uncertain about what that the sort of blurred line between those two things is?
It's an important brand touch point for an airline, really. It's, you know, they want it to feel like a magazine, so it's something someone's going to pick up and not a piece of sort of corporate literature. People tend to sort of avoid just putting the logo of the airline on the masthead. So you tend to sort of work it a little bit more. But then again, it's also an opportunity for the brand to sort of get in people's minds. So they have to be some clues and some reminders of that brand.
Subtle pushes, I guess.
With the magazine that we do for Porter Airlines in Canada, we named it Reporter, playing a little bit on the name of the airline. And we kept, most of the sort of the brand components, but we did sort of push it on the edges as to what, you know, it's not a corporate piece. It's a very lifestyle-driven and destination-driven piece.
Adam, let's switch to you then and some of your favourites. A thing of beauty you have there before you, I think.
Thank you. You don't mean Maris.
Well, of course.
So I have in my hands Wingspan, which is the in-flight magazine of the ANA group. This is indicative of, I think, Japanese magazine publishing as a whole, and, you know, very on brand for us here at Midori House, I guess. But from the off, it really kind of is entrancing. Has a fantastic painted cover. All of their covers that I've seen to date kind of follow this lead. And as you flick through, there's just a real sense of rhythm to it. There's brilliantly commissioned photography. It really takes you to far off places. It's not your standard destination. So even though this is all written in Japanese, I can't read a word of it, I can luxuriate in those kind of images and where they're taking you to. And I think that's a key thing for a lot of in-flight magazines, is you're stuck at 30,000 feet and you want to be on the ground and feeling like you're being intrepid. And a lot of the magazines don't do that. So in here, we have something on Carolyn cooking, which just looks wonderful, and you kind of just want to taste what they're cooking there. They really take you to all these different destinations. There's a bit on Brittany and the cider industry there, and it's just typically kind of Japanese in terms of how in-depth they go. You know, they go to the farms where the apples are and so forth. And it's just really immersive, and, you know, some wonderful spreads and great portraiture. The one place that it all falls apart, and this is quite often the case with airline magazines, is that towards the back end, we get into the corporate side of things, which is required, but could be treated in a much more gentle way. And then we go into the maps, which are just woeful. You have all this wonderful character up front, and then at the back, it just falls apart. It's a real shame. And also, there is a lack of English translation. They do have an English section at the back, but it actually doesn't repeat the content from up front. So I want to know about the cider industry in Brittany, and yet I can't find the translation. And the section that is translated in English is laid out really poorly. The type size is kind of slightly large. It's a shame. They're kind of halfway there.
More from both my guests coming up a little later. Up next, though, we're going to hear from a man who knows a thing or two himself about content marketing in the in-flight sector. Hearing from someone from Sparfax right after this.
Monaco has shops around the world selling our exclusive collaborations with some of our favourite designers, including Ettinger, Porter, Barenna, Jawbone, Oliver Peoples, and many more. You can find us on College Street in Toronto, Hudson and Charles in New York, and in the heart of Wan Chai in Hong Kong, and two in London. So, whether you're after a versatile travelling wardrobe, Something for the home or a present for a loved one, or just missing back issues from your collection. You're sure to find something at the Monocle Shop.
Now, it seems clear that interest and demand for a well-produced in-flight magazine has certainly not died, well, for me and my guests today at least. But what's the view on this rather specialist field of print from some of the other experts? Sparfax is a global leader in content marketing in the in-flight sector. It has since 1985 focused on the consumer in transit and has worked on magazines for British Airways, American Airlines, Lanchile and countless others. Our producer, David Pleasant, spoke to Sparfax's president of content marketing, Raymond Girard, to get some insider in-flight insights.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard Delta Airlines Flight 2998, bound for Atlanta, Georgia, with continued service to Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport.
In-flight publications obviously have been around a really long time, and they've thrived in some markets. In other markets, they don't do quite as well. But essentially, you know, what they need to do is better create connections between airline brands and their customers. They need to celebrate that relationship between an airline brand and a customer. And that's what we do. We work on relationships. We work on creating content that connects brands and consumers. I usually have a soliloquy about the captive audience and how I believe that's been that just makes us lazy in this industry, in the industry of in-flight. So many publishers say, you know, it's a brilliant business because we've got this captive audience. And we've always said the captive audience never has existed. As long as you've walked onto a plane with a briefcase, you were never captive to any airline's publication. So you really had to work hard to make it better or good at the very least. And now that we're walking on with iPads and iPhones and all manner of personal entertainment devices, the customer is even less captive. So we try to bang out the captive audience thinking from our employees worldwide, because that just makes you think that you've got it easy and that you don't have to work hard to engage and entertain the customer. It's quite the opposite. You have to work harder.
All aisles, exits, and bulkhead areas should now be clear.
And if we can talk about sort of trends, what has happened to the in-flight magazine? Have you seen it diminish in importance and kind of the attention paid to it by publishers and airlines alike? What have you seen happen in the last, the last 5 years?
I'd say it all depends on the attitude that airlines have for communicating and connecting with their customers. Some publications have indeed diminished. I think those that have diminished are those who start taking the reader for granted and just sort of position them, you know, give them ads for hair replacement technology and all manner of content that nobody's really all that interested in. So airlines that see them as a repository for bland stuff are seeing them diminish in importance. They're seeing decreasing advertising sales with every issue almost. But there are airlines that do see it differently. Some airlines, you know, I'm thinking of Air Canada, even British Airways, Singapore Airlines, Vueling in Spain. Some airlines really see it as an opportunity to have a conversation with the customer and to present them content on their own terms.
And that's kind of a theme that we see across all manner of publications. That kind of lack of investment in a paper product has perhaps led to decline rather than any kind of lack of demand from the user. What do you think can be done to kind of reinvigorate the in-flight magazine? I mean, I'm always struck, and I think we're at Monocle, we're struck with a kind of the visual identity of airlines and how strong that history is, and how perhaps some airlines are missing a trick and not using what is a wonderful kind of design philosophy on a plate. Would you agree?
Absolutely. I think that, well, going back to the first part of your question, what can they do to reinvigorate the platform or the magazine? I think that airlines can celebrate the environment. So if you look at in-flight publications versus anything else the customer has in their briefcase, any other publication they can find in the gift shop at the airport or on the newsstand, I think there's a great opportunity to have a lot of fun with the environment and to do something that's really quite specific to what's going on, which is getting somebody from A to B in a metal tube at 35,000 feet. There's a lot of content in there, and that's not something that a lot of other publications can do well. The airlines that get that are really having fun with it.
Once airborne, we'll let you know when you may use approved electronic devices, but note that some items may not be used at any time during the flight.
If I can just ask you a couple of kind of practical questions. If you've got a client with a brief and you know, say you've got a new airline who's engaged Sparfax to create an in-flight magazine for them, what kind of considerations are you taking in? You know, how do you go about creating that product? Presumably, you've got to think about, you know, what type of flights are taken, you know, because a lot of big airlines will have just one type of magazine for all their different flights and all the different people that get on that flight. So how do you go about doing that?
Well, various ways, but fundamentally the first step we take is getting under the skin of the culture of the reader and the culture of that brand. So we try and assimilate exactly what it is that brand's about. What are they trying to say to their reader, to their customer? And what can they say with authority and authenticity? So if you're, I don't know, Aeroflot, you've got a really interesting story. You've got a great history, and most of your readers are of the Russian culture, very conscious of the history of that brand in that country, for better or worse. And if you're, I don't know, LAN Airlines, you've got a broad market of a Pan-American audience. Everyone speaks Spanish, but they all speak a different culture almost. So it's all about understanding who it is who's reading that publication, but especially starting with, you know, what that airline should and could say. So it's quite a deep dive into culture, corporate culture as well as reader culture.
And Raymond, finally, just a little kind of geeky detail from you. I always really like the back of an in-flight magazine when they'll tell you about all the different types of planes that the airline has and also the destination map. Are you a fan of keeping that kind of detail and those kind of facts in the in-flight magazine?
Absolutely. I'm actually a big fan of enhancing that section. I think, you know, again, back to what I was saying earlier about what can airlines offer that publications in the gift shop or in the newsstand can't. And I think that is a celebration of what they're all about. You know, I once flew Toronto to Calgary, which is a 4-hour flight, and I watched one guy in the business class cabin for the entire flight read the fleet page. I mean, he was just poring over every single detail of that airplane.
Once again, welcome aboard Delta Flight 2928 to Atlanta, and thank you for flying Delta.
That was the president of content marketing at leading in-flight magazine specialist Sparfax, speaking to our David Pleasant a little earlier. Some interesting themes that they were discussing there to my guests here and now on the stack, Maris and Adam. In particular, talking about sometimes airlines fail to play to their own strengths. They don't revisit their design heritage, their brand heritage. Mm. And it's a bit of an open goal. It's an easy thing to do right. Adam, do you think sometimes, you know, there's too much thought goes into it and airlines forget to hark back to some of those great sort of enticing heritage sort of brands, heritage ideas about, you know, the romance of flying that people actually are still really, they still find really engaging and warm ideas?
I think so. Actually, there's a piece, I think it's in the back of the BA High Life magazine that is a kind of, it's called like time travel or something. You know, it's a very simple column that kind of looks back at, I think this one concentrates on the old uniforms that stewardesses used to wear. So it's kind of shameless, but there's something quite nice about
that. It works.
Yeah, exactly. And not to bang on about ANA too much, but the magazine that they have for their business class is called Azure. In this particular issue I have in front of me, they have this really excellent celebration of the 747 that they were retiring. And it's just really, really sweetly put together. It's a real celebration of the plane itself. Yeah, it's a bit, you know, kind of aviation geek stuff, but that's great. Earlier on, I said, I want them to take me onto the ground. But at the same time, I think there is that kind of aviation geek side of things that people do want to see.
I was going to ask Maris, you were hearing in that report there about it's a reader absolutely wrapped by the flight details or the plane specifics. Are you one of those poring over every measurement? Or do you prefer a bit of long form journalism maybe when you're actually reading these magazines?
No, I think you got me in with the first one. I love looking at planes. It's really interesting looking at the different ways that, and actually ANA is a really good example of how they do get their aircraft interestingly illustrated actually in the backs. And it's something that is definitely sort of overlooked, and in any of our publications we like to bring some originality to the way that someone sees or perceives an aircraft. it's a great opportunity for a magazine to sort of, again, just engage people. And that route map is always wonderful, isn't it? You see all of those lines going across the globe and you can sort of dream a little bit when you
exactly.
see
that. Oh, that's what a beautiful way of putting it. That's poetic. we've got so many magazines we mentioned at the top. Let's sort of rattle through a few. Maybe just pick a couple that jump out at you for one reason or another.
Let's keep it positive. I think Swiss magazine I really liked just solely for the fact that it concentrates on one city at a time. And one of the things that appears to be an issue within this industry is that there are magazines that are overly cluttered. They're trying to do too much all at once. And they're not really celebrating the destinations themselves, which is, after all, why you're getting on a plane in the first place. So this issue I have in front of me of Swiss magazine is on Stockholm. It's nothing completely wild, but it's just it gets you on the ground and it introduces you to some locals, which I think is, you know, this trend that you see throughout publishing at the moment, really kind of making you feel like you're part of the neighbourhoods that you're visiting and so forth. It's very nicely put together, really great photography that certainly isn't drawn from stock, most of it. A job well done, I think, by Swiss.
Well, it's nice. I mean, I think we talked before about magazines like Boat that do the same thing, sort of relocate to a city and really go for that sort of immersive feel. And it's interesting that there are some magazines that have the confidence to go at a particular subject, be it one city, one location, in a lot more detail. What about some other trends, Maris, from the magazines we have here? Any other things that jump out? Any others that have sort of impressed you or angered you? I don't mind if you want to have a good rant, you'd be welcome to do that as well.
There's too many things to be angry about on this term, to be fair. I think we're enjoying sort of the highlights, but yeah, I mean, there are so many sort of missed opportunities when you see the full array of the magazines. I mean, I think maybe the Alitalia Ulysses could be a little bit
better. Let's have
a look.
Come on, let's name and shame. but what is it? Is it a slight lack of imagination, do you think? Because again, I mean, we talked about complacency earlier, and that was another thing that was echoed in the report we heard from David Pleasant, that, you know, there is a degree, because, I mean, I said this thing about captive audience, and Raymond was very particular, saying, no, you know, that's absolutely the opposite way of looking at it. But do you think, I mean, does Ulysses magazine, is that one that maybe does look like it's suffering from a bit of complacency, perhaps?
Typographically, they're sort of touching on the world of the Alitalia brand. It's kind of in the right place, but it's a little bit heavy-handed, I think, for a brand. You know, it's as a potential, you know, for a classic Italian brand, they could do anything. Comparing it, not to compare it too much, but if we were to compare it with, for example, the Air France magazine, it's kind of on a very different level. It doesn't feel like they're pushing themselves as much as they could, and the content as well. If you compare the amount of advertising that Air France has managed to capture with the fashion, all of the fashion advertising, it's a huge, and you can see it's an incredibly successful magazine. With the Alitalia, they're sort of lacking a little bit on the advertising side. And I think the dual language side of things is they don't really sort of, you need to sort of embrace the fact that you're working with two languages when you're designing for them, instead of just doing, oh yeah, we're going to do Italian in Roman, and then we're going to do English in Italic. When you are reading it, you're thinking about that individual, who that is, and they should be catered for and have a unique column or a unique, you know, way of looking. Not necessarily dumped at the back either. It's the is the other way. But each airline has to sort of make those decisions on their own. But just to come back again, I think all of us really like the idea of what Air France have done with their publication with the magazine. It's got a nice kind of weight to it, and it's very well designed. I'm not quite sure when they would have redesigned this, but it looks very much in sync with their latest advertising campaign.
Yeah, I think that's a really important consideration for this. And actually, across the board, there's real consistency with the Air France offer there. So you see the magazine and you see the ads, and there's a real narrative that connects them. And they also have this magazine, which is actually in the shame pile, I hate to say, but called Madame, just to bring it down a little bit. I mean, this kind of, it's very fashion focused, and that's an area which obviously Air France feel that they want to own at the moment. And that's great, but I kind of don't really get the point of Madame so much. I mean, obviously it's geared towards a female audience, so perhaps I'm not the reader for it, but it really doesn't kind of elevate beyond where they're kind of mainstream magazine is. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they deal with both of these entities over time.
Absolutely. It's interesting that we, you know, to use a sort of flight pun, this idea of connections. Obviously, we're normally talking about it about flight transfers, but this connection between brands and consumers. And I wonder, Maris, as a sort of final thought, really, what are the sort of, if you could sort of pen some kind of primer for people? If, let's say, an airline's, you know, considering maybe reviewing its strategy when it comes to its magazine, what are the sort of key things that they need to be mindful of when they're considering that connectivity between their brand and this consumer that they're trying to reach? Are there things that you think if you stick to broadly, you can't go too far wrong?
Yeah, I think you need to be very empathic to your reader and really sort of understand, you know, who they are, what they want, where they're going to be going. Think about the environment that the magazine's going to be distributed in, how people are going to collect it, what it's competing with, whether it needs to stick out just that extra inch from the seat back pocket is very important. You know, how tactile it is, you know, the stocks, you know, you are competing with, you know, for example, you look at an iPhone or an iPad and someone's watching their sort of latest episode of whatever. And then really you kind of think it's all glass and whatever. And actually the opportunity to be very tactile with a magazine is there. And some of these magazines do it, like, you know, the Ling and the Air France magazine. There's small tip-ins, you know, there's things that really keep you engaged and make the most of the format itself. But of course, you know, you need to have some really good content. You want to keep, you want to make sure that it's something that is updatable and that the reader is interested to gather and collect and ultimately, I think, take away with them. You know, we don't want these magazines to be left on board. Although it sounds like that sometimes people aren't allowed to, but yeah. That sounds slightly bizarre.
I think that's only some of the more sort of restrictive budget airlines, perhaps. Adam, again, just a final thought. I mean, it's interesting, you know, what Mara's saying there about connecting with the reader. It's a challenge, I suppose, because there is a diversity within the readership, both in terms of, you know, the destinations, the attitude, the kind of travel they're undertaking, even with a specific airline. Is that very difficult, you know, particularly if you're looking to, you know, when you're sort of discussing with clients about how you can service that reader, how you can deliver their brand vision to them? Is it complicated because of the diversity of the sort of the reader, that there's such a sort of a mix of interest, of destinations where people are going? Or do you think that, you know, it's the old chestnut, if you stay true to certain kind of core principles, you can deliver something that will work across the board?
It differs for, I guess, if you've got business class versus economy. But the one thing that really sort of stands out for me is that if you have confidence to execute a magazine in a particular way, such as with the Swiss concentration on one city, Air France having this kind of very intrepid on the ground feel, it's more to do with the confidence of the execution. And I think if it gets muddied with too many ideas, it then becomes just kind of impenetrable to the reader. The other thing I think that I've really realized that is missing is there's this kind of lack of tactility perhaps across the board. And I was thinking about a magazine called Carlos that is, gosh, it's over 10 years old when it, you know, it launched in 2003. I think most people here are quite familiar with it. But that was for Virgin Upper Class, and it had this beautiful, you know, really just gritty kind of cardboard cover. And the content was just so kind of idiosyncratic and wonderful. And there's a need for a new Carlos somewhere along the way, I think.
There you go. A call to arms to end to end this in-flight edition of The Stack. Wink Creative Senior Strategist Adam Thompson and the agency's Creative Director Maris Fraser, thank you both very much for coming to share your wisdom with us here on the programme.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tom.
And that brings us to the end of this edition 111 of The Stack with me, Tom Edwards. Special thanks to my guests, Maris Fraser and Adam Thompson, and to our producer, David Pleasant, researcher, Rebecca Unger, and our studio manager, of course, Claire Urban. Any comments or queries, drop us a note as ever at info@monocle.com. And don't forget, we're back next Saturday at the very same time. Catch us again via our website, monocle.com, or via iTunes or SoundCloud. But for now, until next time, it's goodbye.